I'm going to be talking about some work that my colleagues and I have been doing on trying to measure resilience as an outgrowth of positive identity development. No relationships to disclose, although I did get married this year. So why resilience? So over the last decade or so, as there's been a lot more discussion around health disparities in LGBT populations, compared to heterosexual populations in this country, there's an increasing focus on what keeps LGBT persons healthy, right? And resilience as a protective factor for health and well-being, in particular young gay and bisexual males. I would say in developmental psychology as well as public health, there's an emerging consensus that resilience is not an outcome in and of itself, but it's more of a process of positive adaptation in the presence of risk, and that both the risk and resilience is context and population specific. And I'm going to return to this idea about specificity throughout this talk. Resilience among LGBT youth is often proposed by a number of researchers to emerge as adolescents are developing their personal identity development with the assumptions that adversity is experienced by growing up LGBT within heteronormative as well as, or maybe heterosexist environments. So, despite this emerging consensus that resilience is a process, the historical attempts to measure it have really focused on individually focused traits. And what we wanted to do was move this individual focus to a more multidimensional construct that encompassed social interactions and required an ecological perspective. So we wanted to develop indicators that assessed resilience as an outgrowth of identity development that involved individual, dyadic, and societal factors, and we wanted to test a brief measure among a community-based sample of young gay and bisexual males. So what we did was, just to give you some background, we worked with Gary Harper at DePaul, who's now at the University of Michigan, and he had done two studies of young gay and bisexual males within the Adolescent Trials Network for HIV interventions that looked at identities, the various identities that these young men had and associations with their health behavior. And what emerged out of those studies was this idea of a transactional model of identity development. So it was not stage-based, as a lot of identity development models have historically been for LGBT populations. But it was proposing, iterative cycles of identity development in which young men sort of assess the fit of their identity based on social interactions they have, social messages they receive. And we went back to that qualitative data from those two studies to look for indicators of resilience. Of those iterative cycles in which young men, they experience an awareness of same-sex orientation, they evaluate this awareness based on the social context that they're living in, they go out and explore same-sex interactions within the LGBT community. These are not just sexual interactions, but friendship interactions and social interactions. And then there are resulting cognitions and affects and behavior that result from that. So that's kind of the theoretical model that we operated from. So we went to the qualitative data to find specific indicators of this. Here are some samples. These statements, they were agreement scales. So they were measured on a four-point scale. Response categories were 1 equals strongly disagree to 4 equals strongly agree. Examples of this evaluation of awareness cycle was most people at my school were respectful of gay persons. You can see the other ones. Also notice that we did not make this a broad measure. We were using the specific language and the specific words from these young men in these qualitative studies. So sometimes the word LGBT is used. Sometimes it's gay or bisexual, sometimes it's gay, depending on the lived experience of the young men whose data we were accessing for these indicators, okay? What else to say about that? Yeah, these are some of the other examples of the indicators that we developed. There was 18 in total. So the population that completed this draft measure came from a survey that I implemented in Chicago last year called the Chicago Young Men's Health Survey. This resilience measure was just a small part of it. The sample turned out to be, 200 young gay and bisexual men. Eligibility criteria was between the ages of 16 and 24 and having had sex, either oral sex or anal sex with another male in the last 3 months. We recruited them between March and October, used a mix of recruitment methods. They completed an ACASI survey, which took about an hour. And give you some sample demographics. It was 38% black, about a quarter Latino, about a quarter white, and various other ethnic identifications, including Asian American, Native American, multiracial, biracial. Almost two-thirds of the sample identified gay as gay or homosexual. 28.5% was bisexual. And then there were some other identities indicated, including queer, trade, twin spirit or other, which we unfortunately had to lump into an other category. The mean age of the respondents was a little less than 21 years old. So our data analysis plan, we use principal components analysis to reduce the number of pilot indicators to a brief and parsimonious measure of resilience. We then examined the internal consistency of this reduced scale across a number of subgroups in the sample, specifically the ethnic groups as well as the sexual orientation groups. And then we conducted bivariate and multivariate analysis of the mean score of this resilience measure with various demographic variables, as well as attitudinal variables such as internalized homophobia, depression, and measures of social support. So what happened in the PCA, initially four items were eliminated just because their commonalities were less than 0.50, which is kind of a benchmark for first iterations of PCA. Subsequently, four additional components loaded onto single components, but they didn't collectively load onto components. So those four items were eliminated, which left us with 10 indicators that loaded on two components, comprising 35% and 16% of the total variance, respectively. So these were the 10 items. The first six came from that evaluation of same-sex exploration cycle. So after meeting other LGBT persons, I was more comfortable with who I was. I thought there were people I could talk to about my experiences. After meeting other LGBT people, LGBT persons, I wanted to disprove stereotypes. I got to know people who were supportive of me. These last four indicators came from the resulting affects cognition conceptual cycle. We can see that those 10 items all loaded on this first component, which, for lack of a better word, we termed identity socialization. And then the last three items, I feel that I am accepted, I feel proud of myself, I feel that I'm closer to the person I want to be, loaded on a second component, but almost equally on the first component as well. Okay? How am I doing on time? That's what I got. Okay. In terms of reliability, overall, the scale was demonstrated a high degree of internal consistency. We looked at the subgroups that gave us sufficient internal consistency as well. We did not assess the other groups just because we didn't have the power to. So, in terms of bivariate analysis, we looked at the mean score across the attitudinal scales. We see that there was a significant negative correlation with internalized homophobia as well as depression. significant positive correlations with social support from family, social support from friends. Those are two subscales from Zimit's social support scale. Social support from significant other did not significantly correlate. Did some ANOVA to look at associations with the racial and ethnic identities, as well as the self-reported sexual identities. There were significant effects. The Black and African American participants tended to have a significantly lower mean score than the Latino and white participants. And the gay identified participants had a significantly higher mean score than the bisexually identified participants. So remember that. When we entered the correlates into a linear regression model, we see that internalized homophobia is still statistically significant in a negative direction. See social support from friends, but not family, and gay identity as positive predictors of this resilience scale. All right, so overall, it demonstrated acceptable validity and reliability and correlated with other psychosocial measures. What I think is interesting here is this, the positive association with gay identity, negative association with bisexual identity, suggests that this scale that we developed measures an underlying construct of gay identity-oriented resilience, and this may not extend to young bisexual males. So there's, I think, a need for specific bisexual identity-related measures around resilience. That even though I think the transactional model that Harper and his colleagues proposed gives us room to explore how bisexual identity occurs in a transactional process, and so it's not stage-based, but it is continually revisited. The specific data that came from these qualitative studies came from the mouths of largely gay-identified men, right? And so I think this lends itself to the specificity of the measures for the gay-identified population, maybe not necessarily bisexually-identified population. However, I will say that the young bisexually identified men in this sample had significant lower levels of social support, significantly higher levels of depression and internalized homophobia, just like this resilience scale measure, right? So there's something going on there. I'm not sure, but I think there is a need for a more specific measures around bisexual identity, and hopefully we're going to hear about that in the HIV and sexual identity presentations later this afternoon. So these results emphasize the important role of social networks and friendships in the positive identity development and resilience in this population. Future studies of health and well-being among gay male adults may benefit from further testing of this measure on larger populations, population-based samples. And it may also help guide multidimensional interventions that impact youth at these individual, dyadic, and societal levels. So I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Gary Harper at the University of Michigan, Amy Herrick at the University of Pittsburgh. Work was funded under a career development grant from the National Institute of Mental Health, and want to extend our deep gratitude to the participants, not just in the survey, but in the previous two studies, who really offered up a lot of personal information about their lives and helped us develop this measure. And there are the references. Oh, right on.
Thank you very much. Well, why don't you stay up here just for a moment,
okay,
Doug? And do we have one or two questions from the audience right now? Yes, sir.
Yes. He said he wondered what degree religiosity may play in assessment of resilience. I think that's an important point. I think religiosity, I think trauma, experiences of trauma is another area to explore in terms of resilience. But I think religiosity in terms of social support, there's probably a lot going on there. In terms of the environments that they're growing up in, yeah. I think religiosity is a hard thing to measure, though.